And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of our show where we talk to an author. And I'm very pleased to be talking with Caroline Sutherland, who has written a book called The Body Knows, How to Tune Into Your Body and Improve Your Health. She's also written a book called The Body Knows, and it has the second book is How to Stay Young. So this is a very exciting interview, and I'm really looking forward to it. Caroline is a medical intuitive, and so this should be a very interesting show. Welcome, Caroline.
Oh, it's lovely to be with you. Thank you, Lori.
So, Caroline, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey? I mean, it's definitely in your book, and you've certainly had some interesting experiences to allow you to develop your medical intuition. But why don't you tell everybody kind of what your journey has been that got you to where you are now?
Well, you talk about intuitive soul. So every soul is inner-directed, I believe. And if we listen the way you teach and counsel people, then, you know, the compass point moves in the direction of the growth for the soul, which is the journey, of course, the perfection of the soul, and, you know, helping a person to find their finest place and their finest contribution that they can make to the world. And like a lot of people on your show, I came to my work, my intuitive work, just, you know, very serendipitously. Of course, it's all orchestrated divinely. The individual, the human, doesn't, you know, really have a lot of, you know, stake in that, but it's a divine orchestration. And if we as humans stay on top of that and stay alert and aware, then of course we know that we are being led every moment of our lives. But I started out as a patient for a medical doctor who specialized in environmental medicine. I really didn't know what the next step would be, and a lot of us don't know what the next step is going to be on our journey. And a lot of people come to their finest work or their higher work through illness, and that's what happened to me. I was a newspaper writer with a large city newspaper and magazine. I started to develop the early warning signs of multiple sclerosis. My own family physician, primary care physician, sent me to a doctor who specialized in environmental medicine. Environmental medicine is the branch of medicine that deals with the human body in relationship to the environment. Everything the person's eating, breathing, coming in contact with, whatever those elements are, and the effect of those elements on the body. So I was introduced to this in the early in 1983. That's a long time ago. And sure enough, I didn't have MS, but I had what was displaying the symptoms of MS. But all of that cleared up in about 4 weeks. I was symptom-free, and I got my life right back, and I knew that what I had witnessed personally was something that was translatable to other people, and I set about researching and writing and exploring and delving into the world of environmental medicine, which is, you know, now very well known, mm-hmm. and started on my path and my journey and stopped writing, you know, at the newspaper and immersed myself in this 100%. And then, very wonderfully, the doctor who was treating me asked me to come and work for him as his assistant and learn to do sensitivity testing for thousands of patients. And by the time I left a clinical setting in 1995, I had hands-on over 55,000 patient visits. And during that time, you can imagine doing that many tests on each person, you know, hundreds of tests on hundreds of people. You know, you become very instinctive, and I just could pick up, you know, the moment the person came into the clinic, the moment I saw their chart, I just, you know, my instincts just switched on, and I just had instincts and inner knowing about each person, which I was very lucky. I shared with a doctor, and he, you know, in more cases than not, he would incorporate some of those instinctive impressions into his treatment protocol.
Mm-hmm. Which is really a blessing, because, you know, a lot of the medical doctors, you know, probably wouldn't have even listened to your intuition. So, I mean, obviously you chose the exact place to be for the exact reasons to allow yourself to be where you are now.
Yes, I was very fortunate, and that gave me a lot of confidence. And I might not know exactly what was needed, but I'd say something. There's a homeopathic on the second shelf in the dispensary that this man needs. And sure enough, the doctor would go in there, and it would be a homeopathic like Thuya, which is related to building back up the immune system or a deep miasm at a deep level. And so I just knew, you know, I might not know exactly what it was, but mm-hmm. I knew where it was. And the other thing that was interesting is we had a lot of dilutions, neutralizing doses for simple things like, you know, dust and feathers and cats and, you know, just very simple things. And people would sit down and I'd start to do the tests and I would know exactly what end point or how to pinpoint a dilution. So, for example, if somebody comes in and they're sensitive to cats, well, we need to know how sensitive. Mm-hmm. So on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, they would turn up being an 8 or a 6 or whatever sensitive to a particular allergen. And so pinpointing this testing meant that we would get some very accurate results. And so what was interesting is within 3 months of starting to do this testing, with the instinct switched on, and I'll tell you how I think I got to that place, we had a year-long waiting list in that clinic. Wow. It was that fast. Mm-hmm. People just spread the word, oh my gosh, you know, we're getting some really good results. And I was very much in the background. The doctor took all the credit for everything. I didn't mind that a bit. I was very interested. I was like the little mad detective, the mad scientist in the back room doing this testing. It was extremely interesting. But how I think I got there and how people can really switch on their intuition. First of all, I teach medical intuition classes. I believe that my book that you have, The Body Knows, How to Tune Into Your Body and Improve Your Health, is a primer for medical intuition. If they have that book and they practice those exercises, within a number of days they'll be switched on, at least by knowing the efficacy of their foods or their supplements. But I think one of the major ingredients that really helped me was learning to do meditation. Mm. And I studied with a very skilled woman who's now in her, gosh, she's got to be late 80s now, in Northern California. She still teaches, but she's pretty frail. And she wrote a wonderful book that people can get and start to practice. Her, you know, her course guideline, and her name is June Destel, D'Estelle, June Destel. And her book is called The Illuminated Mind, which is available on Amazon. And it's a wonderful book. And if you co-partner with somebody or start a group and go through that book piece by piece, chapter by chapter, and then possibly study with somebody, just a very skilled meditation teacher, I think a person's well on their way. So meditation, openness, receptivity, wanting to know. You know, my question was always, show me, show me, show me, you know, to the universe, to the divine, to God, if you will. Show me, you know, tell me. Tell me what this body wants. Show me, show me. I wasn't going to second guess anything. Well, you know, I'll look it up in a book and I think it's this and that. No, are you kidding? Show me. Tell me. Talk to me.
Right.
And the universe tells me all the time, talks to me all the time. Doesn't matter what I'm doing, I can ask any question and boom, the answer will be right there. It comes, you know, temporaneously to me. It's not, well, let's sit down and ponder this and have a cup of tea and see if the answer will come. Boom, are you kidding? It's there all the time. And for that, I'm extremely grateful.
Mm-hmm. So one of the comments that you make, and I think it's really important for everybody to understand, is you say that not everybody has the capacity to heal, but most of us will get better. And that's really what the body is designed to do.
Yes. Well, let's face it. You know, everyone can repair to some degree unless they're dying or unless they're, I mean, even somebody who's been seriously injured, even somebody who's been burned or in the hospital or is having cancer treatment, in my view, they can make inroads into getting well. People don't have the tools. The biggest tool of all, and Louise, as Louise Hay says, and she's my publisher, you've got two things you can control. One is your thoughts. And one is the food that you eat. And people are way out of control in their thoughts. Mm-hmm. They're thinking the woe is me and this is terrible and ain't it awful pretty much all the time. You know, people should check their thoughts. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the second place that they have complete control over, but they're out of control, is their food. And people are mainlining starch, sugar, caffeine, anything that is a popular drug that doesn't have a label, which is, you know, food drugs. And they're just knocking those things back like there's no tomorrow, and they can't understand why they've got no energy, they can't think clearly, they're gaining weight, you know, they're having emotional issues, ups and downs, and a lot of pain. And people don't realize they have the tool, and literally within 5 days, a lot of their symptoms will back off. So when you look at somebody, let's say somebody that was born with some kind of congenital deformity or challenge, mm-hmm. those people, and I talk about them in my book, they can turn around. Will they completely be well so that they can go to a normal school or university or hold down a job? Maybe not. But can they have more energy? The lights, can they be on a little bit in within them? Can they have more brain capacity, more functional ability? And in my view, abso-darn-lutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important. Now, you talk about how there's key body systems, and I've never heard these systems before. They're different to me, and I don't know if that's, you know, just a different modalities that you've been taught. But you call one the CNS and the other DLH.
Yes. Well, there's basically four different types.
Right.
So the first one is a central nervous system type, and that's somebody who's white, Anglo-Saxon, you know, born with some British heritage or Northern European heritage, like Scandinavian, light skin, light hair. And their biggest problem is they have to really watch their nervous system. They have very fragile or they have sensitive nervous systems. And what will affect the nervous system the most, and that's going to be stimulants, i.e. chocolate, coffee, you know, Lipton's tea, alcohol, anything that's a stimulant will affect them, will change them, will literally alter their personality. And their biggest problem is carbohydrate metabolism, i.e. starch and sugar. They don't do well as vegetarians. They need the balance of protein. They don't have strong, robust GI tracts because they tend to give their power away. They're very invested in people, places, and things outside of themselves. They're very invested in the past. They'll stay ruminating and machinating in the past almost their entire life, and they're always future-oriented, thinking always ahead, and they're rarely in the present moment. Now, that doesn't mean to say that that isn't related to everybody, but characteristically, central nervous system types. And how I determined this was from years of doing allergy testing with something called a pretest. And that pretest showed the doctor where he or she needed to do more testing. And so that pretest showed up different systems. In other words, the digestive system, hormonal system, the nervous system, the skeletal system, the respiratory system. And so over and over and over and over again for 55,000 patient visits, looking at these systems, I thought, well, isn't this interesting? Central nervous system types, they don't do well with stimulants, nor do they handle starch and sugar well. Oh, and they appear to be people that are light-skinned, light-haired, coming from, you know, Scandinavian countries or England or Ireland or Scotland. Isn't this interesting? Then there's another type, and that's a digestive lymphatic hormonal type. Those are usually African-Americans, Native American people, Hispanic background, maybe some dark Irish. We know a lot of the dark Irish people came originally from, you know, Central Europe, where people are dark-skinned, and they made their way over to Ireland. Also, people from the Middle East, you know, India, Japan, that kind of thing, would come in under this particular category, digestive, lymphatic, and hormonal. So you look at somebody like Oprah Winfrey or Deepak Chopra, they are digestive, lymphatic, hormonal types. So what do we need to do with them? They don't do well with milk or milk-based products at all. None of these people respond well at all to milk. Mm. Because it'll affect them digestively and it affects them lymphatically. They also don't do well with caffeine. So caffeine and dairy need to come out and the lymph starts to become unblocked. And usually from a very early age or often, they can have hormonal imbalances. And even though these people are very skilled and obviously, you know a lot and know what they should be doing, both of these people that I've mentioned should have a look at their hormones, because hormone balancing, in my opinion, and possibly subclinical low thyroid has a lot to do in an overall sense with the digestive lymphatic hormonal type as far as their fat-burning metabolism and well-being is concerned. They also have heart-related issues. Well, so does everybody, but these people experience heart-related issues, circulatory-related issues, differently than a central nervous system type. Then there's combination types. Those are people that are, say they might have a British mother, and then they might have a German father. So they come in as combination types. They're not clear central nervous system types. They're not clearly digestive lymphatic hormonal types. They are a mixture of both. So what do? You balance them from every standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth category would be the complicated people. I call them the tricky people, meaning that they're very complicated. They can be in walkers, wheelchairs, elderly, have congenital birth, you know, challenges. Very, you know, very seriously complex, you know, people with a lot of physical issues. And quite frankly, you know, who's going to go there and start sorting them out? But I have had people come to me with, and I mention in my book, some very interesting children who, you know, have all kinds of compounded health issues. And, as I mentioned earlier, you can get movement out of these people. So, yes, they fall into certain categories. And once somebody buys a book and learns what the categories are, they will see a person walking towards them and they'll know exactly, oh, that's a central nervous system type. For goodness sakes, well, they shouldn't be having a lot of starch and a lot of sugar. Now, isn't that interesting? They've got weight problems. Wow, that's too many carbohydrates. Boy, I bet you I can tell you what they should do to lose weight. So it really helps a person understand where to look, because a lot of people have instincts, but they've got no idea where to look.
Right. You know, I find that really fascinating, and I obviously must be a combination person,
because
I have a little bit of both in
yes.
me. And, you know, quite recently, and we're going to talk a little bit about this, because I think a lot of your book talks about the diet, because that is one of the environmental things, as you say, that we do have control over. So quite recently, I was diagnosed with candida. Now, it just happened to be very shortly after Christmas. I probably had way too much sugar over the Christmas period. I don't actually think I have candida. I mean, sure, I think everybody has candida, as you mentioned. But, you know, I think as you talk about it, you know, truly, a lot of the things that I don't usually do, a lot of the things that you talk about, I don't usually have dairy. I don't usually have sugar. And so, you know, when looking at a lot of this stuff, it really helps me understand a little bit more about myself to understand, you know, these are the things that are going to impact me all the time.
Absolutely. Well, this candida piece is huge, and I'm really glad you've mentioned it, because everyone is dealing with it.
Right.
Everyone has it naturally occurring in their lower colon flora. It's called candida albicans yeast. It's a strain of yeast that lives in the digestive tract, but it can live anywhere in the body where it's moist and damp. It can be in the ears. It can be in the lungs. Mm-hmm. It can be in the sinuses. It can be vaginal. It can be bladder. I mean, it's anywhere in the skin, folds of the skin. And so people think that it's something that's completely unrelated. It is so related to everything else that it's really quite remarkable. And for me, it comes to me by a scent. It's a sweet, sickly smell that just wafts right off the body. And as soon as I smell it, I know that person is going to be tired. They're going to be craving sugar. They've probably started to lose their memory, and they're probably having uncontrollable cravings for starches and sugars and all kinds of issues. And when you look at candida, how widespread it is, it's linked into every major, big, labeled illness, from cancer to lupus to MS to chronic fatigue to Epstein-Barr to AIDS to Alzheimer's. I mean, it's there. So it behooves everyone, and I would suggest for you, just to constantly, on an ongoing basis, to be taking some grapefruit seed extract tablets or some, you know, yeast eradication capsules. We have, you know, quite a few things for yeast on my website, carolinesutherland.com, but people will need a code, an access code, to get onto the supplements portion of the site, and that code is LIFE, LIFE123. But, you know, everyone needs to be dealing with candida yeast, and that's why people end up in nursing homes. I mean, you walk into a nursing home, all that is, you're met with two scents. One is a wall of yeast, and the other is a wall of urine, and those are the scents that you get when you open the door. Mm. And those people are just walking funguses, and they're just waiting to die. So if, as I say in my book, candida yeast it relates to or is the equivalent of the death process, we want to arrest that breakdown, death, and decay process before we, you know, complete our mission and our purpose on this planet. I mean, yours is as a communicator, as is mine, and a teacher. And we want to make sure that this candida yeast, this death process, is under control at all times. And it can spring forth, just like you say, the holidays, you know, there's fudge, there's chocolate, there's this and that rolling around. And everyone's going to have a little bit more yeast overgrowth. And look at the people that have antibiotics. Yeah. And everyone is exposed to antibiotics unless they eat hormone-free, antibiotic-free poultry, beef, you know, milk, that kind of thing. So everyone is exposed to antibiotics every day. And then, of course, when they are, then candida yeast starts to, you know, grow and grow rampantly. And so it's very simple. Keep your sugars, as you say, under control and starches way down, and then use something on an ongoing basis, on, off, to control candida yeast. And those things abound at the health food store. And if people want to come on to my Monday night teleconferences, which are free every Monday night, I give people specific guidelines for what to do for yeast. So you're right. It is a big, big topic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really believe it is. And I think, you know, not enough people are aware of it. When they do become aware of it, you know, it's a big process for some people to get rid of.
Yeah, but you see, it's not just monitored by diet.
No.
Because unless the person has red meat and onions or garlic, and that's all they have in their diet, and who's going to do that? Even, you know, sweet potato or even vegetables that are higher in carbohydrate like green beans, they will feed candida yeast. End of story. The vegetarian diet, of course, is just a perfect environment to grow yeast, which is why so many vegetarians have so many problems.
Right. I love that chapter in your book, actually, not because I'm against vegetarians, because I think it's really important, but it's just, you know, some of them, you know, come off like they're so much better. And it's just like, you know, you need to realize everything around us. I mean, we're the judgments that come off of people, but we need to embrace everything. And you know, there's lots of our bodies are just not meant to it. I did a vegetarian diet for about 8 months, and it was because I was I was on a trip with my ex, and we went to Colorado or something, and every place we went to, there were like animal heads on the walls.
Oh,
and I just
couldn't
handle it.
Okay. Well, you know, I eat a lot of fish, and, you know, fair enough. You know, a fish has a beating heart, and they do have a consciousness. But so does a carrot. So does a string bean. So
sure.
Where are you going to draw the line? And the interesting thing, the very interesting thing, which is a real capper on this, is that, for example, many people swear off eating red meat. But there's an important amino acid in red meat called L-arginine. And red meat supports the electrical firing of the heart. And in testing, vegetarians and even elite athletes who don't eat red meat are missing this L-arginine. And L-arginine is what keeps the arteries pliable, pliant, and you know, without hardening, for lack of a better word. L-arginine is the amino acid that does that. And so in specific testing called pulse wave analysis, where a person can actually have the quality of their arteries tested, it has been shown that the people that have the highest level of problem, you know, the most difficulties with this viscosity of their arteries are the vegetarians and, in many cases, elite athletes. So get back on some red meat. You guys in Montana should have just gone in there and slapped down a $20 bill and said, give me a steak. But, you know, I hate to be really ruthless about that, because there is a consciousness, there is an awareness, and we do have organically grown, mainly raised and killed organic beef, and I do believe that these creatures have sacrificed their lives for the for our evolution, and they indeed will be, you know, their consciousness will be raised up on, you know, as a consequence of that. So, you know, the question is, let's look at the body. Where is the energy? And I see it over and over and over again. I mean, I see who knows how many, between 3,000 and 5,000 people a year, and so many people, I look at them, needs red meat. Some people need it, but if they're central nervous system types and they have light skin, light hair, and they were, you know, have ancestry from Scotland or England or Northern Europe or Scandinavia, you bet they're going to be needing something related to this.
That's fascinating. I mean, and I've always believed that too. And you know, prayer goes a long way as well. When you know, you're grateful for what you receive, and you're grateful for, you know, the food, and you can change the vibration of the food. But I think we just need to be more aware of it. I think a lot of times, a lot of the information out there in the media is very confusing.
Oh, absolutely. But you see, people are doing their best. You've got to look at them. They're totally doing their best. They say, this is what I want to do. I don't want to kill anything, or I want to eat this way or that way. Fine. I think that's fabulous. Wait 6 months. If you feel great, wow, you're doing awesome. If you don't feel great, something's off. What could it be? And then just take out your pendulum and ask. Ask the body. The body will tell you. Is there something else I need to add to my diet? Yes or no? Is it a vegetable? No. Is it a type of a protein? Yes. Is it water? No. Is it this? No. Is it that? Yes. And find out. It's perfectly simple.
Mm-hmm.
And then follow the guidelines of the body. Does the person want to crater out? I remember a perfect example. I went to a vegetarian community and did a lot of readings and seminars there. And I remember a man coming to me, and he had a cane, and he was nearly blind, and he was like 53. Oh. And I looked at him. His diet was way off. And he was a strict vegetarian, wouldn't eat a single thing with a beating heart. And he said, Caroline, he said, I would rather go blind. And he was well on his way. Mm. I would rather go blind than kill an animal. Well, now, what do you think?
Wow.
It's a big discussion. I tell you, if I had known how difficult this discussion was going to be with so many people, I would never have written this book. I'd never come this far. I'd still be married to my first husband, you know, making peanut butter cookies and raising my children. I would be not doing any of this, because probably almost for me, the toughest sled has been the vegetarians who think they are so, so right. They don't have the background that I have, which is by now 120,000 people, going on 130,000 people, 27 years of experience, seeing, looking into bodies, stepping inside, walking around, saying, oh, 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 they're missing their absorption of their iron and B vitamins.
Hmm. Yeah. So you talk about weight issues. Weight issues seems to be, you know, a big, well, there's like three areas I think that everybody sort of concentrates. It's either, you know, their relationship, their career, or their weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so from what you're saying, both the central nervous and the DLH, they both can have weight issues, and it's regarding the...
Oh, yes. Well, the weight issues are multifaceted. There's
right.
five components of weight loss, and the first component is understanding and knowing their food sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is that food sensitivities develop when people are multiply sensitive to foods that they are eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so all they need to do is stop the foods that they are eating and eat other things, and they'll, you know, lose weight. And so that's the first component, is understanding and knowing the food sensitivities or the food allergies. The second component, we've already discussed it, is candida yeast. That's where their uncontrollable cravings are coming from,
right,
for starch and sugar when they have an overgrowth of yeast in their system. And everyone is having an overgrowth of some yeast, you know, to some extent. So that's pretty straightforward, but nobody out there in the diet industry is talking about it. And then the third component, of course, is keeping carbs low. Carbs are starches and sugars. Those have to be kept low. But how can they be kept low when the person has uncontrollable cravings?
Right.
So we have to get at candida yeast. And, of course, I have wonderful appetite suppressant drops called Apatrol, and those are available from my website. Just off the front homepage, a little button, six easy solutions, you just touch that and there's your appetite suppressant drops. And so we have to suppress the appetite, start cleaning up candida yeast, and then the cravings go away. Yippee-doo, when people don't have cravings for food, they're not eating. They're only eating when they're hungry. Then they're going to lose weight. The fourth component, of course, is some kind of exercise, which everyone should be doing every day. And then the fifth one, and the biggest one, is hormones. You know, look at these people. Look at Oprah, for example. Nobody's addressed her hormone issues. Nobody's addressed her thyroid correctly. Nobody's told her about her food sensitivities, nor have they been effectively able to help her with carbohydrate cravings,
mm-hmm,
because nobody has addressed candida yeast with her. I mean, it's a crime. It's criminal. Here's a woman who's the wealthiest woman on the face of the planet with all the resources, and nobody, where are their brains? Where are their heads? Like, where are her experts? You know,
yeah,
it's crazy. People just don't know this stuff. So weight is not that difficult. I do not tackle weight from the standpoint of emotions. People say, oh, well, I'm eating because I'm suppressing my, you know, whatever it is, or I'm feeding my inner child. Well, fair enough. Yeah, they are. But never mind all that. Leave that alone. Forget that. And let's go to the sort of the root causes on a physical level, get them handled, and then go in and talk about your childhood issues.
Mm-hmm.
People tackle that entirely, in my opinion, from the wrong end.
I think that's brilliant.
You poor thing. Here's Caroline. She's the heavy-handed, you know, let's be direct here. But, you know, people don't know this. I mean, it's very staggering.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about addictions, because I think, you know, spiritually and everywhere else, addiction seems to be a big area that is being addressed and that we are trying to understand of ourselves. And I think it's an interesting area that that we really need to understand.
Well, you know, and that's a good point you bring this up. I have, let's see, how should I describe this? People come to me that write magazines and they, you know, they want chapters out of my book and so forth. And the chapter that is the most downloaded, I don't know how many times you could find it on the internet, is the chapter that I have there, the whole section on addictions. And addictions are what take us away from our path. So if you think of a path going straight down, you know, sort of the middle of the picture, so to speak, and we're on that path, the addictions are the seductive voices that call to us from the side of the path to take us off the path. So that can be to cigarettes, to, you know, alcohol, to addictions to people. There are certain people that are so addicted, like women to men and men to women, to certain people, they will put their own lives on hold and continue to stay in an abusive relationship or in a relationship that's just not helping them grow because they're so addicted to that person. They could be addicted to a place. In other words, very fixed on a place. Well, I have to live in this house, in this town, because that's where my grandmother was raised, my mother was raised, and now I'm raised here and I'm raising my children here. So people are willing to stay stuck, and addictions keep us stuck. And in that particular chapter, I have a lot of case histories through the book that people really relate to. They like the case histories.
Absolutely.
And there's one woman, I remember she came to me, I believe her name was Pauline, and that's how I described her in the book, but that wasn't her real name. And she came to me and she couldn't walk, you know, without the aid of a cane and, you know, a lot of help from her husband. Her husband was a very sweet, very lovely man. And she was actually quite a competent woman. And she had held down a successful job, and she just got sicker and sicker and sicker. So I did a reading on her, and I took her off all inflammatory foods, which would contribute to her pain. So inflammatory foods are wheat, corn, caffeine, and sugar. So I suggested that for 7 days, she stop all those inflammatory foods. I saw her on a Thursday. We did a workshop on Sunday. By the time she got to the workshop, she could actually lift her own self out of a chair without the aid of her husband, and she could stand up, and she was even ready to take, you know, a few steps on her own. So her pain was so much less. So it was very interesting. Then I decided I was going to check in with her 2 weeks later. So I checked in with her. She was doing so much better. She could even walk. She could dress herself. She was not having to call upon her husband for everything. And then when I checked in with her again, she said, Caroline, she said, it's just too hard to stick to the diet. I'm back to my own ways. I'm having my bread. I'm having my pasta. My joint pain has all come back. And she said, you know, I was going to have to go off disability because I was feeling so much better. And, you know, I really like my husband caring for me. And I'm so sorry, but. So, you know, it's very interesting, but that woman has a higher purpose. There's things that she's going to do in her life. And so her addiction, you know, to staying on and she was on medication and staying in that state of ill health and drawing from that constant support of her husband, you know, definitely kept him back, and it's keeping her back. And it was so visible. She saw it. She knew it. She got it. But she made the decision, you know what? I think I'd rather stay right here.
Yeah. And I think that's what our addictions do to us. We, you know, we get so caught up in the illusions of what we believe we're getting that we think it's enough.
But, you know, it's a huge decision. In my last book, The Body Knows How to Stay Young, which you have, which I think is a great book, I describe summiting a mountain. And I say, you know, is a person willing to make the climb and indeed to summit? Or are they willing to, you know, perambulate around the perimeter of their mountain, maybe taking a few steps, but the thought of actually taking the climb and summiting is, you know, pretty daunting for people. And we all have to summit out of a lot of challenges. You know, look at the grief, the loss, the disappointment, the betrayal, the everything. Mm. When a person takes a step on a spiritual path, they are given, you know, one after the other, anything that is buried, anything that needs to come up for healing over time is going to come up for healing. And that's what's happening in our world, in the areas of finance, in the areas of religion, in the areas of education, in the areas of, you know, politics and integrity. I mean, just the other day, this, you know, and it grieves me, because when we're in this movement, the self-help movement, and we see leaders in the self-help movement, you know, falling from grace, mm-hmm. it's very disturbing to those of us that are in this movement, because I do believe that self-help is the help, you know. Yeah. And yet I find that there are leaders and there are people, I'm supposed to be on addictions, I'm now moved to integrity, but there's leaders in the field that, you know, in my opinion, hey, let's see you lead here with a little integrity and a little bit of humility. And
the walk the talk part.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see these people walking their walk, yeah. talking their talk. And that's what I try to do. But, you know, people are going to stay where they're going to stay. Pain is a big motivator. If people are in pain, boy, they'll almost do anything. And, you know, just people will do things in their own time. And fair enough, you know, everyone has an evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think integrity is a huge issue in our area, especially, yeah. but, and, you know, the whole world. And I think it's becoming much more apparent as we move towards 2012. But, and I think that's really, you know, part of what's changing so dramatically is that we have to start living our truth. We have to all mm-hmm. start coming from a place of authenticity instead of, you know, the masks and the illusions that we've been placing.
That's right.
Yeah. So your chapter on bones and skeleton, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, this isn't really one of your areas, but you mentioned some really key things that made me kind of stop and go, wow, like, when somebody has a neck problem, you have to talk about this, because I think it's just brilliant.
Well, all of this comes to me instinctively. I mean, I've just basically in my life just carried on and didn't think too much about instinct, but I feel very lucky. I feel that I have very wonderful, very lovely inner guidance. I don't label my guidance, oh, it's, you know, some great master or something. I just say, you know, we're just going directly to God, we're going directly to Source, and I'm going to get the information I need here. And I'm very fortunate, because I get given, you know, the relationships and the correlations between different parts of the body and what's going on emotionally. I'm very fortunate with that, just like a lot of other intuitives are fortunate that way. But, for example, the neck that you mentioned, the neck is the dividing line between the head and the heart. And if there's problems in the neck, then it, usually the heart knows, you know, the heart knows exactly, and the head will rationalize, oh, well, you know, he's a good man, or she's a great mother, or, you know, I should stay at this job because I've got a good pension plan. Well, you know, the heart knows. The heart knows the person's not happy. You can't deny the knowledge of the heart. And so then the congestion, of course, binds up in the neck. And then the shoulders usually are related to that, but they represent burden. A lot of people who have problems with their shoulders are carrying a lot. They're working very hard. They're caring for elderly parents or children that are running amok or something. And then the skeleton in general, people come to me. I don't see any of that when they come to me. I'm more a guts, blood, organs, you know, BM kind of a gal, you know, hormone food thing, you know, digestion. I'm not so much, oh, I see you've got lower back problems. I don't really go there. I say, oh, isn't that interesting? You know, you're sensitive to wheat. So that's a bit of a surprise for people. But skeleton in general is structure. So if you think of a house or you think of a building, that is what your bones are. And they're the structure that you're overlaying or putting things on. And so that you know, the foundation that you're adding all these other things. You know, you've got your organs, you've got your systems on top of your skeleton. So when a person doesn't have a very good foundation or a good structure, that comes from belief in self, it comes from how to make one's way in the world, confidence, all of that represents structure. If you look at feet, for example, they represent understanding. What are you standing on? Well, it's my feet. Yeah, right. But what are you thinking about? What do you stand for? What's your understanding about a certain situation? Lower back, you know, usually backs in general represent support. And, of course, I love Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life. All kinds of correlations for different parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then different joints like elbows and wrists and, you know, knees and hips would represent ease and flow of movement. So if there's a problem with an elbow or a wrist, you've got to think, you know, am I being held back by something? What's my flow of movement here? And then, of course, if you look at different parts of the body physically, you know, structure is really important. And where does it come from? It comes from digestion. So in other words, absorption of nutrition. How is the absorption? Where is there calcium? Let's take a look at that calcium and find out how good that is. And then you have to look at hormones, because hormones are related to bones. And people with osteoporosis and osteopenia think that it's a calcium thing, which, very nice, very fine, but not necessarily. It's a hormone thing. So estrogen breaks down bone. Progesterone builds bone back up. So it's a two-way street with the estrogen, with the, you know, the breakdown of the bone. It's a constant rebuilding process. And then with the progesterone building it back up. But, of course, for women, the hormone that declines the earliest in menopause or perimenopause is progesterone, and it declines the fastest and the furthest. So that's the one that they need to have a look at if they're having bone density issues. It's not necessarily calcium. It's calcium absorption, and then it's the hormone issue.
Yeah. Very interesting. Now, obviously, because of your extensive background, you tackle the environmental issues in this book. And I think, you know, they're starting to become a little bit more prevalent in our understanding. We're certainly becoming a little bit more aware of some of the things like mold and chemical sensitivities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting factor. And I think a lot of people still aren't very aware of them.
Well, with environmental factors like mold and airborne inhalants and so forth, it's all immune-related. Look
right.
at the stress. First of all, we have personal stress, the oh my God, what's going to happen next. Second of all, we have subconscious stress. We have a world that is very volatile, and as Ram Dass, the great spiritual teacher, now an elderly gentleman but just still as vibrant as ever, says, there's no place to stand. Where is the place that we have? And it's right here, right now. Because we have nothing else. Our future that we used to have 10 or 15 years ago of everything being stable and normal and the lights would go on at night and they'd go off in the morning, that world is not there any longer. We live in a volatile world, a wonderful world, but it's a changing world. As the Buddhists say, the only thing that we have to get used to is change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not good at accepting change. They took a tree out from, you know, outside our home not that long ago. How did I handle that change? I still look at that building that I can see behind that tree, and I'm not happy. Now, a Buddhist would say, oh, what a lovely house. I hope the people are happy there. Oh, tree. You know, are you kidding? I'm like, why did they take that tree down? It was so pretty, and I loved it, and da-da-da. You know, so we don't accept change all that well. It's like we're machinating about it. So then there's stress in the body. And weakens the immune system, we become reactive to environmental molds, and we become reactive to airborne inhalants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember at a very young age being tested for allergies, and it was an elderly gentleman, and he was quite sure that because I had a cat, I was going to be allergic to it, and I was pretty sure that I wasn't. And it did turn out that really I wasn't allergic to anything except I was highly, and I'm still highly allergic to dust, and I don't know what it is about it, but when I'm, you know, stressed or when I have to vacuum or dust or anything like that, I tell you, it's pretty intense.
Yeah, well, I have cleaners, I'm sorry to say, but I have to. I don't want to get around all that vacuuming and dust, and I have cleaners, and that's that, and I've had them for years because I am dust sensitive.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I'll have puffiness under my eyes.
Mucus?
You know, coughing and that sort of thing if I'm around dust. And yes, I do have stress. I have periods where it's very stressful. There's always over my head deadlines and things that I'm working on. And I'm, you know, let's face it, results oriented and also a bit of a perfectionist, which doesn't help. Other people say, oh, well, you know, so I'm 3 days late with a deadline. Mm. Oh, well, no problem. I'm like, oh, I got a deadline. Well, forget it. I'm on it, you know. And so it's just a different kind of a personality. And that plays a big role in it. And sure, we're all working our best to, you know, become the best that we can be. But everyone's got their little issues.
Mm. And I think seasonal affective disorder is a huge one in the winter.
Yeah. Well, in the winter, we have other factors.
Yeah.
And some people are better in the winter than the summer. And some people are definitely better in the summer than they are in the spring and the fall when there's a lot of mold and a lot of damp. And that's one of the questions on a questionnaire about Candida yeast. Are your symptoms better in the summer? Are they worse in the spring and fall? And that's one of the signs, of course, when there's so much mold. There's mold inside, you know, the effects mm-hmm. inside the body and then outside the body.
Right. Yeah. I really liked your chapter on catalysts and forgiveness because I think it, you know, it's our way to get ourselves out of these areas that we kind of get stuck in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a catalyst, you know, is really a great thing. I mean, I had a huge catalyst in my life. I fell in love with a wonderful man, and that didn't work out for, you know, a number of reasons. And that threw me, you know, sort of over the precipice and into grief. It took me quite a while to dig myself out of it. But I learned many lessons. And, of course, that was a catalyst that really threw me into my work. I mean, how did I get through the grief? I just work. created. And just, you know, it was a huge catalyst. It was really tough, boy. And a lot of people have those, but they stay mired in the grief and maybe not realizing that that catalyst is to get them to push them somewhere. Let's go from here to there. And instead, no, well, I think we'll stay here and we'll moan and we'll groan and we'll have our hot chocolate and just kind of stay, you know, in the woe is me victim state. And sure, I had a lot of woe is me, but I just said, okay, we're up and at it here. This is what we're doing. And so, yeah, the catalyst is huge. It can come in a variety of forms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we do get instinctive nudges. We get these little kind of hints and nudges. You know, we shouldn't be doing this or maybe change that. Oh, never mind. I'll listen to you next week. Well, sure enough, then we get the catalyst, you know.
Mm-hmm. And forgiveness and gratitude. Please.
Oh, yes, the forgiveness.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? There is a book. I've forgotten the fellow's name, if I'm not wrong, Tipping or Topping or something like that, who wrote that book, A Radical Forgiveness.
Mm.
And, you know, that's really something, that forgiveness piece. And I always marvel at people that can forgive someone that, you know, say, you know, if their child was killed in an accident and, you know, over time they can forgive the person who was the drunk driver. And, you know, I really marvel at that. And I think the interesting thing is when we forgive a parent who's deceased, and I mentioned this in my book about my father, and boy, he was tough. And of course, you know, I mean, a little kid, if you look at a kid sideways, you know, they'll take it personally. So, you know, now that I'm an adult and I look back, I mean, there's no excuse for, you know, some of his violent behavior, in my opinion. But, you know, I believe that if we can forgive our deceased parents and they're on the other side, I do believe that they do and will have an effect in orchestrating our lives on the physical plane. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we are still connected to them, and I do believe that they can orchestrate things in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to do, and boy, there's people with some very, 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 very extremely tough childhoods. I remember watching Oprah the other day where she had on the four children of the woman who was involved with the man who abducted that lovely Elizabeth Smart in Utah, Salt Lake City, and they were her children. This woman who was, you know, mentally deranged and abducted this little Elizabeth Smart, and their childhood was horrendous. This mother would lock them up, deprive them of food. I mean, the boy had to go out into the fields and trap some kind of a gopher, and I don't know where he got the matches, but light a fire and cook the darn gopher over the fire because he wasn't being given food at home. You know,
wow.
I mean, stuff like this. I mean, people have horrendous childhoods, and yet, one of those kids that was on that show said, you know what, I've forgiven my mother. Well, now, how would I do with that? I don't know. Everyone has their own task set for them for forgiveness. and to get about doing our forgiveness work. You know, in cancer, they talk to the cancer doctors, and we know a lot of them, the ones that do the insulin potentiation therapy or the low-dose chemotherapy without side effects, the IPT. We know a lot of those doctors, and they always say, get the sugar out of the diet and do your forgiveness work, you know, for cancer patients.
Right.
And so then I think one way to navigate through life is really to feel very grateful. I mean, after all, what a privilege to actually have a physical body. You know, when I had my near-death experience, and I know you're just about to close off, but when I had that experience, I was given the opportunity to speak with souls that had passed on to the other side, and they were waiting to be reborn. Mm. And they told me, they said, Caroline, you know, you are very, very lucky to be in physical form, to have the opportunity to be in a physical body, how fortunate you are. And we would give anything, they said to me, to be in a physical body and to be on the planet at this time. So even though things are difficult, to be in gratitude, you know, thank you, God, for this, thank you for that, thank you for my hair, thank you for my eyes, thank you for my house, whatever it is, even however humble it is, I think really helps us to really deeply appreciate the gift of being given human life. And that helps us to forgive our parents. You know, thank you to our parents for giving us life.
Mm-hmm. And it's really understanding, you know, as you said, what life is trying to teach you, and looking at, you know, different ways to understand the message that we're trying to be taught. And I do agree that, you know, this is right now a very blessed time to be on the planet. And I think, you know, we underestimate and take for granted due to all the circumstances we sort of get ourselves caught up in. But, you know, it really is an incredible time.
Mm-hmm.
So we do.
Oh, it is. It's wonderful.
Yeah. We do.
I mean, it's challenging. Let's face it.
Yeah.
But I think it's really wonderful. And if we can stay in the moment, have the consciousness, and co-create with the divine, everything we do is co-creating with the divine.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's important to remember.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few minutes left. I want to talk a little bit about some of your honing intuition, and I like that you did mention it already, but you like to use a scale, and I think that's kind of an important part of it, because I think, you know, we think, you know, we should get a yes, no answer, and, you know, that just seems so vague sometimes. It's not really enough, and so we're looking at different ways to sort of hone our intuition and become a little bit more accurate in our intuition, and I like.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, the first place to start when you're developing intuition, of course, is meditation, openness, and receptivity. Show me, show me, show me. I want to know. Tell me, tell me. To God, Spirit, the Divine, show me. It's basically your operant, you know, sort of word. And then, you're open, and then you want to know the truth. You want to know. So where are you going to start? You don't start with asking questions about the future. You know, is the planet going to come to an end? Am I going to move to France? You know, never mind that. God knows if you're moving to France. You're here. You're right now. And where do you start? You start with the things you know. So I teach people in the book, The Body Knows, how to tune into your body and improve your health. And also in my latest book, The Body Knows How to Stay Young, I teach people how to use a pendulum. Very simply, weighted object, little pendant, and start to swing it and get an idea of a direction of a yes or a no. And then ask the question simply, is this substance beneficial for my body? So you'll get a yes or you'll get a no. So to really get conversant with using the pendulum on all your foods, and not just your foods, your children's foods. What about kids? They can't do a pendulum. Babies can't do a pendulum. Pendulum their foods. Is this good for their body? Is this going to give them diarrhea or constipation? Is this going to give them, you know, breathing problems? And a mother can discern that for herself, for her children. So test the foods, all the foods, and then test the supplements. And like you mentioned, scaling on a scale of 1 to 10, how beneficial is this supplement? So you might get yes, you know, yes on vitamin C. Well, how beneficial is it? Let's say it's a 3 out of 10. Well, what's the point of that type of vitamin C? Is it another type of vitamin C, yes or no? Or is it no vitamin C, yes or no? Or is it an orange every day, yes or no? So, you know, and then when a person does that, they do it over and over and over and over again, they become very skilled at this and can start to tune into parts of their body. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is the overall health of my heart on a scale of 1 to 10? What's the overall health of my pancreas on a scale of 1 to 10? That kind of thing. And you can do literally a full body scan, and it's very helpful. So then you also can get things like what would be useful for my body. Is it a food? No. Is it a supplement? No. Is it an affirmation? Yes. Oh, interesting. Affirmation. Well, I've got a book on affirmations. Let's go find out. Is it at the front? Is it the back? Is it the middle? Where is it? And then inner guidance will just take the person there. And then eventually you don't need a pendulum. You don't need anything. I don't need anything. I just can tell. And so it becomes, you know, a way of life, tuning in. And I think it's something that should be done every day, every moment, in whatever way it's deemed useful.
Right. And to trust, obviously.
Yes. The and more to you trust, do it. That's a big part of it. But that's practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, everybody obviously is intuitive. And it's really a matter of how often you practice, like you say, and whether you have the faith in it. Because, I mean, that is the one problem with the future. And often we're trying to get information about the future,
mm-hmm.
and the future's unpredictable. It's
Nobody
always
knows
unpredictable.
That, really. God, him or herself, and she ain't talking.
And even that, we have choices. Everybody has free will, so...
Yeah, be in the now and go with your senses. I mean, if people... And the interesting thing is, once people clean up, and once people aren't as toxic, their intuition turns on. Literally, the intuition will turn on, and the aura will change. The aura will change in about 2 days, and the intuition will turn on very quickly once people are less toxic. That toxicity definitely hampers intuition.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the last part of your book was really, you know, as you become more healthy, then you can start, you know, reaching for the higher octave, which is your destiny and your purpose.
Higher octave is where you're reaching for, yes.
Hmm.
The evolution of the soul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's
Carolyn,
what you're reaching for.
Yeah. This has been a wonderful interview. Is there anything that you would like to, I mean, tell people how they can get a hold of you, but is there anything that you
sure.
would like to talk about?
Okay, well, my website is carolinesutherland.com, C-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, S for Sam, U-T-H-E-R-L-A-N-D, carolinesutherland.com. Every Monday night I have free teleconferences,
nice.
And I also have 2 shows every month on Contact Talk Radio, where people can call in and get spot readings, and I'll answer their questions. And then, of course, the Hay House, I Can Do It. We'll see people down in San Diego at I Can Do It. That's the weekend of May 13th through 16th. And it's just wonderful to be on your show and to touch base with the people that you have and your followers, and to introduce them to the exciting area of medical intuition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's been a great pleasure. And I would love to have you come back and maybe talk about the body knows how to stay young, because that
sure.
certainly is a hot topic these days, too.
That's right. Thank you so much, Lori.
All right. Take
care. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.